being left without a job immediately meant if I didn't get creative fast, I would not be able to buy food, pay rent, and cover any basic needs.
It's been just 24/7. Like, I wake up, somebody's got questions about unemployment or questions about hour reduction, or my boss and my coworkers are all texting me and calling me to, you know, make sure that I heard the latest.
I typically am an optimist, and it is really hard to put on that, we've got this, we're going to be awesome, we're going to come out the other side better than ever, because we don't know how long it's going to last.
I don't have any concerns for the long run. I have 5 employees. They're all still on their regular schedule. They're all still getting full pay. I have no intention of laying anybody off.
I am assuming that after this crisis is over, there will be some vacancies. I am also confident that the community can be resilient.
This is scary, but it's real.
This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm John Dankosky from New England Public Radio. Those are the voices of people from across our region who've been sharing their experiences of this new economic world since the COVID-19 pandemic hit. Today on the program, we want to hear from you about the impact of coronavirus on our economy. Are you the owner of a small business that's just trying to survive? What's the impact been like on your workforce? Or are you an essential business that's still operating? Have you had to change your business model just to stay afloat? Please join our conversation, 888-720-9677. The number again is 888-720-9677, or you can send us an email to americaamplified@nepr.net. And we want to hear a lot of your voices during this hour. I am joined today by Jay Williams. He's president of Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. It's a community foundation that supports nonprofits in Connecticut. Williams is also the former Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development. He helped to guide the Obama administration through the aftermath of the 2008 recession. Jay Williams, welcome to our program.
John, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Chris Carlozzi. He's State Director for Massachusetts and Rhode Island for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. He advocates for and represents more than 5,000 independent small businesses, from retail to agriculture to manufacturing. Chris, welcome to our show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Now, I want to start with you, Jay, because you have some experience in helping to coordinate response to the Great Recession a decade ago. I'm wondering first if you can just set us up here. How is this different from what you went through while you were part of the administration in the aftermath of the 2008 recession?
Thanks, Sean. Again, this is different. Well, let me start by saying, fortunately or unfortunately, I've had that experience at the federal level with the last Great Recession and being the mayor of one of the most economically devastated cities in the country over the past decade or so. This is different in the sense that in the previous recession, there were things that people were pointing to and predicting as weaknesses that would ultimately lead to the economic collapse, primarily in the banking sector. Although those calls were being unheeded, although the profitability and the banks themselves were resistant to the types of conditions and regulations that ultimately were put in place, in many instances, people could see that coming over the course of several months leading up to it, even a year. In this crisis, it has come upon us in a way that was completely unpredictable, in the sense of a virus that started in China and made its way over to the U.S. Across Europe, and the almost instantaneous economic devastation that crippled not just the financial sector, but manufacturing, entertainment, supply chains, in addition to the fact that we in this country, unfortunately, and others found ourselves woefully underprepared. So it's different because it is more global in terms of the economy. The effects are not limited to countries that are less wealthy, that are less developed. The richest and most powerful countries in the world have been brought to their knees in a way that no one could have anticipated.
And as you talk about being the mayor of a city that went through its own economic troubles, you were the mayor of Youngstown, Ohio, a city that's not unlike some of our urban areas in New England, some towns and cities that have never really recovered from job losses years ago. Do you see some similarities with what's happening there with what you've seen in economic downturns in the past in Youngstown?
Absolutely, John. As you correctly pointed out, cities like Youngstown and Hartford, and even Springfield, Massachusetts, to a certain extent, never fully recovered from the globalization and the manufacturing decline that happened in the 70s. So those cities were already struggling to redefine themselves, certainly having made some progress, but even at the tail end of a 10-year economic expansion, which was the longest economic expansion on record, those cities were still struggling. So imagine already being on the margins when this economic collapse hits. Mm. Those cities are disproportionately impacted. And as a result, we are having to figure out. So the other side of that, though, is these cities have lots of experience in dealing with economic struggle and decline. It's experience that might prove more relevant or might provide them an opportunity to weather this. But it is absolutely, there are strong similarities between Youngstown, Springfield, Hartford, and so many of the communities in our region.
If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about the economic impact of COVID-19 on our region. You can call into 888-720-9677, 888-720-9677, or send us an email, americaamplified@nepr.net, and we'll get to some of your calls in just a moment. I want to bring in, though, Chris Carlozzi. You're on the phone constantly with small businesses in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Based on these conversations, what types of businesses have been hit the hardest by this, Chris?
Well, I looking at this scenario, less than 2 months ago, these business owners in states like Massachusetts, Rhode Island, the biggest problem they were dealing with was finding qualified workers. Optimism was at an all-time high. Businesses were thriving, dealing with the normal issues that they face with state legislatures like taxes and regulations and mandates. But now I'm getting calls, hundreds of calls over the last couple of weeks from businesses that are struggling. And it started with the restaurant industry first, because you saw a lot of those non-essential bans come down on them, where they were gathering. There were gathering thresholds for how many people could be in a location. And then it was ratcheted back to the point where they could only have takeout only. And you had these restaurants that were used to crowds coming in, people buying a few drinks, having a meal. And now they were just stuck with doing this takeout model. And a lot of businesses couldn't adapt to that. They were so used to their normal model that they couldn't transition over. And it became very difficult. So that was the first type of industry we saw hit by this pandemic. And then it spread to retail. You see tourism travel impacted pretty heavily. And events, so event planning, where you had events like graduations coming up or business conferences. And all those saw cancellations, which had a ripple effect, because it's not just the person doing the planning, it's the caterers, the facilities, everything that's tied to that event. And then you saw other things like sports clubs and gyms. All those types of businesses, they just weren't allowed to have customers come through the door anymore, and it had a significant impact.
I want to get to a phone call, actually. This is Holly, who's calling from Coventry, Connecticut. Hi there, Holly. You're on our show.
Hi. How are you today?
Doing okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a small business owner. My husband and I own an auction gallery. We do estate liquidations, and, we have crowds that come once a week, and we had to lay off all our workers who are subcontractors, and we're not getting a paycheck either. So it's tough. We're applying for unemployment and the small business grant. We don't know where we fall. Right now we're taking this time.
Yeah,
it's hard. Our
business, it's hard for you to
prepare.
Yeah,
and going forth, we're going to do things differently.
And Holly, sorry to break in. So you're having a hard time determining what sort of aid you're going to be looking for, what type of business you actually have in terms of the federal aid that's being made available.
Exactly.
Hmm.
We applied for both through our bank, through the federal business grant, and then unemployment. We figured one would cancel the other one out.
Well, Holly, thank you so much for the call. And Chris, we're going to get more to that in just a moment, talking about navigating through all of this. But you hear from Holly, this is something where she has a business, and then she's dealing with other businesses. And so there's this follow-on effect. Everyone in her network is affected by this.
Oh, certainly. It has a ripple effect through the entire economy. When you hear of things like no longer having sporting events at a location like, say, Fenway Park, well, you think about all the bars and restaurants around that, or vendors, and it just has that ripple effect through that entire community's economy. And it leads to things like Holly was just talking about with job loss for independent contractors, as well as the people that you employ as an employer. So there are several different programs out there, and I'll be happy to talk about those that are available now for small businesses and being rolled out to help mitigate the damage being done by this crisis.
You mentioned the restaurant industry. We want to hear from one of the restaurant owners who contacted us. This is Regenda Taba, who owns Cafe Momo. It's a family-run Nepalese restaurant in Manchester, New Hampshire. He says they've been completely closed, and they're surviving, at least so far.
Surviving meaning we have some food. We are eating that, and we have some few savings, so we are spending that saving, and after finish that, we don't know what to do.
Chris, how long do you think that the restaurants that you're talking with can actually survive? We just heard from Connecticut's governor yesterday saying that it will probably be at least until the end of May that non-essential businesses will have to be closed. Other states are going to be following that kind of timeline, it seems. How long can a lot of these small restaurants survive?
Oh, I think it's very difficult for their survival right now. The fact that they've been shut down this long, I think, has been problematic. And I talked to some restaurants right when this started happening, right when that first ban on dine-in services started in states like Massachusetts. And some of them just opted to have having to close their doors rather than keep it open for takeout only because they couldn't make that adaptation. They couldn't make that change. And it wouldn't fit the way their business model worked. So those ones that are doing takeout, I mean, I've heard from some restaurant owners who are only staying open. They're not really making a profit right now, but they're staying open just to keep a couple workers employed. That certainly may change as time goes on because they just can't keep doing it. I know I've talked to several that are applying for either the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program or the Paycheck Protection Program loan in order to help them stay afloat during that period until things start to normalize somewhat and both customers are comfortable going out and states are comfortable allowing restaurants to open up again for dine-in services. But it's going to be very difficult.
I want to hear from another listener who we talked to. Paul Lumia owns a flower shop in Southington, Connecticut. He says before the coronavirus, he did funerals and weddings, anniversaries, proms. Business was good. Now business is down like 60%. It's okay. We'll hopefully get back to Paul Lumia in just a second. We have just a minute left, Jay Williams. I'm wondering if you can talk for just a moment about the nonprofits that you're hearing from. I know that that is a big part of what you're doing right now. You're hearing from nonprofits as well as for-profit companies. Just about 30 seconds, if you would.
We are. And I would say the notion of organizations that may not emerge from this being able to reopen their doors isn't limited to the for-profit businesses. There are a number of nonprofits that are facing the same prospect, and that would be absolutely devastating. So we are providing direct grants and assistance to the nonprofits who are addressing the most basic urgent needs, basic human needs of those most disproportionately affected. But we're also establishing a revolving loan fund and other capacity building so that those organizations that are in the nonprofit world can hopefully weather this storm and emerge for what will be a very long and tedious recovery.
Coming up in the conversation, we're going to be talking about the aid that is coming to small businesses. If you want to join us, 888-720-9677 or americaamplified@nepr.net. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm John Dankosky from New England Public Radio. We're taking your calls from around New England about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on our economy. You can join our conversation, 888-720-9677, 888-720-9677, or you can send us an email at americaamplified@nepr.net. Over the course of the last week or so, we've been talking to a lot of people around New England about how this has been impacting their lives. Let's hear from Jill Tate. She's co-CEO of Corinthian Events, which primarily does corporate event planning in Boston. She has laid off 12 of her staff so far out of 26, and remaining staff are now on partial unemployment.
It's so heartbreaking and sad when we've had to lay people off and these young kids that it's their first job out of college and we've been cultivating them and helping them grow so carefully. And now we just have to let them go. And it's hard. You let them go and you try to remain unemotional and you go back to your desk and you cry. One of our girls had just moved out of her family's home into a new apartment last month. And like, oh God, like that just hurt.
So some real human stories coming in, but also stories about how businesses are going to survive and look forward. We wanted to hear from Paul Lumia. He's the flower shop owner in Southington, Connecticut. His business has been way down over the course of the last few months.
Financially, it's concerning. Making payroll, making payments. Not knowing when it's going to end is the part that's, the part that bothers you the most. If I knew it was going to be at a certain time, I can deal with it, but not knowing and hearing some of the predictions that are out is a little terrifying.
Chris Carlozzi, this is the thing that we hear from small businesses, not even just during a pandemic, but all the time, all year round. They want some certainty. They want to know what's coming next. And this is the ultimate uncertainty. As you talk to small business owners around your region, is that one of the things that you're hearing most, the idea that we just don't know when this is going to end?
Something that small businesses seek, whether it's through policies that are being enacted by state or federal legislatures, having that guarantee that something will be a certain way for a year period or 2 year period helps them plan and helps them survive as a business. So that uncertainty that's out there now, that is absolutely something that is weighing on these businesses. I mean, they're looking for short-term lights at the end of the tunnel, like some of these programs that are being instituted, but not knowing when this is going to end, when they can get back to normal operations, when customers are going to start coming through their doors again. Not knowing that, I think, is something that is certainly putting a shiver down the spine of most business owners in New England right now.
Jay Williams, you've had to deal with this both at the local level as a city mayor and then also at the federal level. When businesses are saying, we want to know what's happening next, but there is this lack of certainty. We don't know when there will be a vaccine for this virus. We don't know when we can fully get back to business as a country. What do you tell people when they're looking for certainty at a time when there is none?
There isn't much you can tell them. The worst thing you could do is to give a false sense of hope or to give misinformation or disinformation. The most effective thing you can do is to be very transparent, to be very deliberate. You cannot over-communicate in terms of, as long as you're communicating accurate information, and when you don't know, saying that you don't know. That being said, I think it's also important, and this is where bureaucracies, whether at the state, federal, or local level, do serve a purpose, where you need to have and rely on those tried and true mechanisms and procedures that perhaps did not anticipate this type of disaster, but that can be put into place to provide some certainty, some reassurance, some familiarity. But I think that is, at the end of the day, probably one of the most devastating aspects of this. Is the uncertainty and the fact that this is not something that we had a cure for or a vaccine for, in addition to the fact that we're getting conflicting information oftentimes from the highest levels that send people running in one direction or send the markets reeling and careening in one direction, and then only to find out that that was a false sense of hope or not information that should have been shared in that way. So you can't give a certain answer, and that's what the market craves. That's what businesses crave, as Chris were talking about, and that's what we as individuals crave. So to the extent that, in our role as Community Foundation, having been here for 95 plus years, we are trying to provide as much resource, support, and capacity to those organizations that are weathering that uncertainty, knowing that at the end of the day, there will at some point be an end to this. And we want to be then prepared to again, engage and support the very, very long recovery.
Oh, we want to hear from some more callers from around New England during this America Amplified special, 888-720-9677. If you want to share your small business story or what's happening with your employer, let's go to Lee. Lee is calling from Laconia, New Hampshire. Hi there, Lee. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. How's it going with you?
Pretty good. For once, it's a positive news on the radio. I have a small business, a computer repair shop, and ever since this has happened, I've seen business ramp up. simply because people need their computers, they're staying at home. So I'm doing a lot of remote support, selling refurbished computers. And believe it or not, they're still bringing and dropping off computers. You know, I wipe them off, Clorox wipes. I think you have to get creative.
Yes.
Sometimes if you're in business and you still want to thrive.
So this has been a net positive so far for your business. Do you expect that this is going to continue as more people are working at home and continuing to use their computers maybe more than they ever have before?
Well, I think initially if I have created new contacts and relationships with people and businesses that need services that I wouldn't have normally anyway. So I think it would continue.
Lee, thank you very much for the call. And I think Chris, you know, he does make a good point. We hear an awful lot of bad news. I'm quite sure that some of those small businesses you're talking with have some good news stories out of this. Are you hearing some of those like Lee, people who are in business segments where maybe this has been a net positive for them?
There certainly are some industries that have seen positive sales and have increased their sales. And one of the things NFIB did right in the onset, and it's been done weekly now, is gauge our members on how this crisis is impacting their business. And when we first started, it was a small percentage of businesses, around 20%, that thought this was going to have an impact. And then the next week hit, and three quarters of them thought that this crisis was going to have a negative impact. And now we're almost up to roughly 99%. Feel that there's going to be a negative impact on their business. But there is that small percentage of businesses that are finding sales increasing. You're seeing a lot of grocery stores with long lines, people shopping there, people looking for essentials, some hardware stores. So there are some businesses that are seeing stronger sales, that are seeing customers still coming through the doors. You're seeing manufacturers in some areas who have even changed what they were manufacturing to make some of the things that are needed right now to help combat the virus. So there are some businesses that have adapted, that have found ways to do things they have not done before. I've talked to a couple business owners who can't have customers come through their doors, so now they're doing online sales where, in this instance, she and her husband were packaging things, getting them ready, shipping them out. It was clothing items, something they had not done before. In fact, states like Rhode Island have set up through their commerce department, a way to help businesses that hadn't sold things online find a way to do that now through a help hotline.
If you want to join our conversation, 888-720-9677 or send us an email at americaamplified@npr.net. We're going to get to more of your calls in just a moment. Chris, though, I want to walk through the CARES Act and some of the relief that the federal government has put forward, options to help small businesses, loans, forgivable loans, grants, all sorts of debt relief. What we're hearing is there's a lot of paperwork. Some of it is pretty confusing. Not a whole lot of it is getting processed very, very quickly. Can you just walk through quickly, if you would, some of the options that are available out there and what you're hearing from small business people who are trying to apply for some of this aid?
Right now, there are two programs that people are really talking about, and one has been around since this crisis really started. You heard about economic injury disaster loans. Those are through the Small Business Administration, the SBA, and the program runs from January 31st to December 31st of 2020. And to be eligible for the economic injury disaster loans, you have to have 500 or fewer employees. You have to be a sole proprietor, an independent contractor, or a self-employed individual, and you've had to have been in business since January 31st of 2020. These loans, the maximum size is $2 million, but one of the incentives for this loan is the applicants who apply for the loan can request an advanced emergency grant of up to $10,000 from the SBA. And that $10,000, it's up to $10,000, so roughly $1,000 per employee up to that $10,000 amount. And what you can use that loan for is payroll, fixed debts like mortgages, rent, lease, accounts payable, and some other bills as well. The duration of that loan is up to 30 years with an interest rate of 3.75% for businesses and 2.75% for nonprofits. There is no loan forgiveness here. So what we're hearing from a lot of small business owners is they don't want to take on any new debt at this time. And that's where the other available program under the CARES Act, which is a lot of people may have heard of, is called the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPL loan. And that is a little different because that is through your financial institution, a commercial bank, a credit union, or other approved lender. That period of time for the program runs from February 15th of this year through June 30th of this year. And that loan can cover an 8-week period of eligible expenses, certain expenses. To be eligible for one of the Paycheck Protection loans, you have to have, once again, 500 or fewer employees, have to be a sole proprietor, an independent contractor, or self-employed individual. A small business that meets the SBA small business industry specific standards as well, and some in the food service industry that use a certain code. So the SBA will tell you if you are eligible for this loan program. You have to be have been in business since February 15th of this year and paid taxes on your employees or independent contractors. That loan is 2.5 times your average monthly payroll cost and measured over a 12-month period of the preceding loan date. So and seasonal businesses as well can take advantage of this, and they would use the period from February 15, 2019 through June 30th, 2019 to determine their payroll and how much the loan would be worth. And those loans, a maximum size for those loans are $10 million, and they have to be used for specific purposes like payroll and other things like rent, again, any sort of employee benefits. So those are very specific things. And what makes this loan a little bit different and why small business owners seem to be gravitating towards it is those loans are forgivable. So if you meet all the qualifications, a portion or all of it will be forgiven at the end of the loan period. And we're hearing things like you have to use the loan for 75% of that loan has to be used for payroll, which is a little difficult for small businesses because that means only 25% of it can be used for those other things like rent or utilities.
All those things that do cost a lot. A lot of people who are wondering about whether or not they're eligible for this fall into some of the niche categories in our economy. People who own small farms, people who are a part of the economy that maybe feel like they haven't gotten very clear guidance on this. I want to hear from a caller. Charlotte is calling from a Sweet Acre Farm, which is located in Connecticut. Charlotte, welcome to our show.
Thanks, John. Nice to talk with you.
Yeah, good to talk with you, too. So how is it for small family farms right now? You just heard Chris lay out all of the various options. Is it clear to you what you're able to avail yourself of right now?
It is becoming clearer the more I poke around. I'm calling from the perspective, my business, a small agricultural business. We're kind of essential employees in waiting. We are experiencing a beautiful early spring. We are planting away. We are ready to support struggling grocery stores and customer access. People are looking for food. They are looking for new ways to access food that are safe. And we're really thinking really hard about how to shift in that marketplace. And transitions are expensive for any business. So when I was looking into the lending programs, I thought, oh yeah, that SBA disaster assistance loan will be perfect. That'll really help us set up some virtual ordering systems, create some food hubs, maybe expand our CSA. And in those eligibility requirements, there are, 500 or less employees, all those things that were previously mentioned, but you cannot be a farm. You also can't be delinquent on childcare payments, and you can't be making income from gambling. It was a strange thing to learn, and it was very disappointing. We were able to apply for the PPP program, and we're hoping to hear back from that, and that it's something that can progress well. You know, we hear about the difficulty in them running this program because there have been so many applications. But I did want to point out that a lot of small farm businesses don't have payroll. So although that's a wonderful program that we may be able to avail ourselves of, folks starting out in their first 5 years, smaller operations often don't have payroll set up on their farms. So they're left out of that equation. And lastly, we have heard about a USDA fund of $9.5 billion, but that was within that disaster relief package. But there's no information whatsoever about what kind of programming they're setting up. And how we might be able to access it. So we're keeping our eye on that, but a little bit frustrated over here.
Yeah, it seems like it. Charlotte is calling from Sweetacre Farm in Connecticut. Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Hey, John, if I can comment on what Charlotte brought up, a very good point, that there are a whole host of other small businesses in our city, small mom-and-pop businesses owned by, you know, minority and female business owners, also don't have the type of payroll that would make them eligible for this because, again, they're family businesses where they don't take a traditional salary, where they have family members running, you know, legitimate businesses that provide services and goods to the communities. In addition to, you've got a whole class of business owners who do not have Social Security numbers but have EIN numbers and are running their businesses. So, you know, there's a lot of debate and discussion that can be had about that, but the reality is they are an important part of the economy of many communities, including Hartford and surrounding communities. And those businesses also are suffering immensely. And they often are the lifeline to individuals who are underserved, overlooked, and are already on the fringes and the margins of the economy when things are good. So as good as the Paycheck Protection Program is, and it is very much needed and welcome, we cannot overlook the fact that as caller pointed out, rural farms are potentially not going to benefit.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and we're going to take a break here. We're talking with Jay Williams. He's president of Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, and also Chris Carlozzi, state director for Massachusetts and Rhode Island for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. We're also taking your phone calls, 888-720-9677, as we talk about the New England economy here on this America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. This is an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. I'm John Dankosky from New England Public Radio. You can call us at 888-720-9677 or email us americaamplified@nepr.net as we talk about the impact on the New England economy. Let's go to Don. Don is calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi there, Don. You're on the air.
Hello, John. Yes, we have three stores in New England. And also three of the stores that are shut down right now. And the problem that we're running into is there's a qualification that you must use 75% of the loan to get the grant, but it's impossible really to hire workers when your stores are closed. So until we have some economic certainty, it's almost impossible. The other thing is the people who are on unemployment right now are part-time workers. They'll be getting unemployment insurance plus a $600 bonus from the government when and if that comes through. So they'd actually, even if we were bringing them back to do nothing, they'd be getting paid less than if they just stayed home.
Yeah, exactly. It's something we've heard from a lot of business owners. It's a weird incentive structure that doesn't necessarily allow people to make the choices that are best for them or their employees. I really appreciate your thoughts, Don. I want to go to Rona, who's calling from Massachusetts, with a different sort of story. Hi there, Rona. You're on.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to... there's an echo here. I wanted to give a perspective of people who are independent artists, which is my situation. And for myself and for many performing artists, we work a lot in schools and libraries, which of course are completely closed now. So all of our work is dried up overnight. And I've been trying to market to people for the future, and nobody wants to do anything. Everyone's so uncertain that they don't want to book anything anymore. So many of us are already working on a very small profit margin, and we often work on grants, and those take a long time to get paid once we actually do our gigs. And so we're in this between a rock and a hard place kind of thing. And I find it very confusing to know exactly whether we qualify for those loan programs that your guest was talking about.
Rona, thank you very much for the phone call. Jay Williams from the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, you represent an awful lot of nonprofits. Many of these nonprofits you're working with are providing direct services to people, but you're also giving out grants to people who are in the sectors that Rona is in. And she says it exactly right. So many small arts organizations are on very thin margins to begin with. What happens with them through this?
That's a great point. And we unfortunately do not give out grants to individuals, but we do partner with organizations such as Way and other nonprofits that can help those individual artists. And she's absolutely right. Those artists not only add to the fabric and the richness of our community, they are contributors to the economics of our community. So to the extent that right now, out of necessity, we are prioritizing those organizations that are focusing on the basic human needs, the acute, urgent need of health and safety and medical care and food and nourishment, child care, we have not forgotten about. We do think that in our coming rounds of funding, we are having conversations about how to support those organizations that support artists and other individuals around that state that are important parts of our community that we need to have to continue to contribute once we get past this most crucial phase.
We got an email from Mary Lynn, who's a small business owner creating designer clothing. She had a full-time employee, but had to furlough him because her sales model is arts and craft shows, and they're all canceled. Her income is just gone. She hears that in the third quarter, it's expected that there will be a robust recovery, but she doesn't have a lot of confidence the consumers will be in a position to buy luxury items by then. She's not sure what will happen to her business. Let's go to Dimitri, who's in Northampton, Massachusetts. Hi there, Dimitri.
Hi, how are you?
Going good. What's on with you? What's happening with you and your business?
I own a small bakery cafe. And we are weighing whether or not we should participate in the Paycheck Protection Program because we have questions that we can't seem to get any answers to. And the questions are about the forgiveness. So if we were to take this loan and then hire back only 30% of our staff, which is all we can actually use, how much of the loan would be forgiven? Would it be a one-to-one ratio of how much we spent on payroll? Also, would we still be able to use 25% of the total loan for utilities and rent, et cetera, Or would that be reduced? We just don't have clarity on these questions.
Chris Carlozzi, I'm just going to put you on pause there because I'm wondering if Chris Carlozzi might have some answers for you on that. Chris?
I can certainly say that the rollout of the Paycheck Protection Program, to say it was a rocky start would be an understatement. I mean, I was on the phone nonstop a week ago when the loan process first opened up from business owners who were having trouble getting through to banks, getting through to the SBA, all sorts of problems with the rollout. Some of those have been smoothed out over that weekend. I've certainly seen the volume of calls coming into my office decrease. But there are questions like Dimitri just asked, and part of the loan forgiveness, it had changed in the process from what we understand, and they changed it to that number where 75% had to be used on payroll. And for a lot of small businesses, as what just alluded to, that's not a very realistic proportion. And from what we hear and what we understand, because not everything has been spelled out directly, the percentage of employees that you bring back will impact the percentage of the forgiveness of the loan. So the more employees you bring back, the higher the forgiveness level, and it does decrease the fewer the employees you bring back. Some of that is still being spelled out, which once again, we get back to talking about uncertainty, something small businesses don't like, but we are seeing more guidance come out almost daily with some of these things. Let's put it this way, it is not the ideal situation. Not everything is spelled out. There are a lot of questions. We're doing a call a little bit later today for our members in Massachusetts with individuals from the SBA. We did a call for our Rhode Island membership on Monday where questions were answered. And some of the questions that were asked on Monday still didn't have those answers. So in some of the calls I am receiving were very similar to the call that we just received here, asking about how the program will work for their business. What if I do this? What if I do that? And in some cases, we've just had to sit back and say, I can't give you an answer to that now. And I know that doesn't help in the end, but what we do understand is that it is going to start getting some money to these businesses. I did hear a success story yesterday from a business owner who was having a very hard time getting through to the SBA, didn't know if the loan was processed, didn't know where he stood in the process, owns a small clothing store in central Massachusetts. And that yesterday afternoon did get a response back. The process was starting to move. He was told he will start to see some money from that $10,000 grant under the disaster loan in his account within the next few days. So he was encouraged to see a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. But that's not going to be true for all businesses. They are going to continue to struggle. As you said, we don't know how long this crisis is going to go on. We don't know when restaurants or small cafes like the caller just mentioned will be able to practice and go back to a normal course of business and have the normal amounts of money coming in that they saw to sustain the business. So it is problematic.
We may have a little bit of a success story here. Josh is calling from Portland, Maine. Hi, Josh. Are things looking up for you?
Yeah, things are going great. How are you?
Doing well. So what happened? Are you able to get some of the loans that you're looking for?
Yeah, so we actually had our PPP dispersed yesterday. I can't stress enough, the process everybody's talking about is complicated, and our account was a rock star. And Bangor Savings Bank was fantastic. They dispersed our loan yesterday. We were told we were the first one at least at that location. I can't stress enough to anybody listening to use an accountant and your commercial accountant or a commercial representative at your bank that you do business with. And they just, they're fantastic as long as they know what they're doing. But like everybody's talking, that a lot of the information is changing sometimes daily on what you need to do.
Yeah.
But we just signed our paperwork yesterday. And everything's going well, but it's definitely a complicated process.
Yeah, it seems like a complicated process, but I'm glad that things at least moved along for you okay. One of the things I wanted to ask Jay Williams was about the federal response. And Jay, you used to work in the Obama administration. I know that you don't want to make this political, but we've heard this from Chris. We've heard this from a lot of callers. This rollout of this aid has been everything from rocky to troublesome. For some people, it's been disastrous. For other people, it's worked out well. How would you grade the federal rollout of this aid package?
Well, John, I'm not going to make it political, but I will make it factual. And again, there were plenty of critics in terms of how the Obama administration rolled out the stimulus with respect to financial collapse and the automotive collapse. And yes, I did have a role in helping to bring some of that stimulus relief to communities across the country. But what you did have then that you don't have now is an administration that was transparent about the facts on the ground, an administration that allowed the experts and the career staff to inform how the process should work. And even then, it was rife with any number of shortcomings. But here, you have hyperbole and you have misinformation and disinformation, and the experts are sidelined and not allowed to put forward their expertise and their experience to try to mitigate it. And when you have that scenario, you get the chaos that we have in this unfortunate. It is not political. They view it through a political lens. This is an election season. I get that. But I can tell you that when you don't allow the experts and you don't allow the processes to play out, which even then requires Herculean effort on track.
And Jay Williams, we're going to jump in just because your line is breaking up a little bit. We're living in that world in which the calls on Zoom, as I think we all well know from doing meetings at home, sometimes can collapse a little bit. I want to thank Jay Williams, president of Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, for joining us for just a couple minutes here. We're still on with Chris Carlozzi, State Director of Massachusetts and Rhode Island for the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and we're taking some of your phone calls at 888-720-9677 and a few emails at americaamplified@nepr.net. Let's get to one more call here. Aaron is calling from the Monadnock region of New Hampshire. Hi there, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
Doing okay. What's up?
So I work for a company that does writing for small businesses. So we're a small business helping small businesses. And one thing that we're doing to help right now, creating content for people on social media and making sure that their customers know that they're still open or how they can still support them. I just recently wrote a blog about local coffee shops that you can still order takeout and you can still go and pick up food there and all the sorts of things we can do to help these people stay open.
It sounds like a really good service, and it sounds like the sort of thing that is able to crop up at a time like this, Aaron, when we need to find new ways of connecting. We need to find new ways of getting information to people, and you're filling a little bit of that need.
Absolutely. We're really working hard at that.
Aaron, thank you so much for calling from New Hampshire. I actually want to hear from one of the voices we talked to this week. Andrew Crawley is an economist from the University of Maine. He says that for years, economists have been looking at broadband infrastructure important to the health and well-being of residents. Here's what he has to say about some of the investments that we might need to make in the aftermath of this crisis.
This current crisis is kind of shining a light on the fact that if you have poor digital infrastructure in places, the ability to work from home becomes incredibly diminished. Going forward, any new innovations, any new growth of industrial areas, I think are going to have to be led by the places that have digital infrastructure. So this might be the time and a catalyst to try and improve digital infrastructure within New England.
Chris Carlozzi, could you talk about that for a moment? There is a possibility that something about our economy in the region changes. We have more people who are working from home, more people who are in need of the types of services that Aaron is talking about. And we've for years, especially in northern New England and in some of our urban areas, had a need for much better broadband infrastructure.
I certainly think we're going to see some major changes when things start to quote unquote normalize and when things get back to when businesses go back to operating. A lot of the members that we represent are more the small retail, restaurant manufacturers. So the types of folks that we represent at NFIB are those types of Main Street businesses that you see in your communities. But I think we're going to see a lot of changes for better or for worse with the way things operate. But one thing that I know that I've been hearing from most of the members, and one of the, I'd say, consistent themes of any business owner I talk to during this period, whether they're a large manufacturer or a small little cafe, is the concern for their employees. And making sure first their employees are safe and their well-being is taken into account in many of these situations, but also the level of concern. You heard from the event planner earlier who was in tears having to do layoffs. And those are the types of stories I've heard all week. Business owners who have family working for them, business owners who have people that are like family who have been working for them for decades at this point. And they just want to make sure at the end of this, and during the crisis, that those workers are taken care of, because in a small business, you've known these people for years. Mm. You've been through good times and bad with them, and you want to make sure at the end of the day that those workers can come back. And I think that's what you're seeing with a lot of business owners who are inquiring about these loans and who are anxious about the loan money coming in. At the end of the day, they just want to make sure, A, their business is still around and that they can bring those workers back when this crisis abates.
And I think make it as good as possible as we come back. Chris Carlozzi, thank you so much for joining us from the National Federation of Independent Businesses. I'm John Dankosky. This has been an America Amplified special from the New England News Collaborative. You can keep the emails coming to America Amplified at nepr.net. Thanks to Morgan Springer, Katie Talarski, John Vosey. Special thanks to Kara Foster, Bart Rankin, and Kat Pastor. Vanessa De La Torre is the executive editor of the New England News Collaborative. America Amplified is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us.